Let's continue in our talks in Genesis by reading Genesis 38. In this chapter, we have the account of Judah's sin with his daughter-in-law, Tamar. Now, this chapter is 30 verses long, so we'll take it in two sections. Let's read Genesis 38, verses 1 through 11. It came to pass at that time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite, whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shuah. And he married her and went into her. So she conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Ur. She conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. And she conceived yet again and bore a son, and called his name Shelah. He was at Kizib when she bore him. Then Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Ur, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord killed him. And Judah said to Onan, "Go into your brother's wife and marry her, and raise up an heir to your brother." But Onan knew that his heir would not be his. And it came to pass, when he went into his brother's wife, that he omitted on the ground, lest he should give an heir to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord. Therefore he killed him also. Then Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, "Remain a widow in your father's house till my son Shelah is grown." For he said, "Lest he also die as his brothers did." And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. All right, a couple of background notes first of all. Genesis 38 is not an easy chapter in the Bible to preach from, is it? However, God did include this chapter in his word for our learning and edification. The first part of this chapter revolves about what is known as the Levirate Law of Marriage. This law was approved by God because it was later made part of the Mosaic Law. See Deuteronomy chapter 25 in this connection. Levirate comes from the Latin word for brother-in-law, and the Levirate law stated that if a married man died without an heir, his next-in-line eligible brother was to marry the widow and raise up an heir to receive his brother's inheritance and carry on his brother's name. In this case, Judah had three sons, and the first son, Ur, married a wife named Tamar. But the Lord took Ur's life because he was wicked in the sight of the Lord, verse 7. What the wickedness was, we don't know. The next brother in line was Onan. But Onan did not want to raise up an heir for his older brother because if no heir was born to his brother, then the inheritance would go over to him. So Onan continually spilled his seed on the ground so that Tamar would not become pregnant. The Hebrew makes it clear here that this was not a one-time event. Well, God disapproved of this gratification without responsibility attitude, and he took Onan's life also. Incidentally, verse 9 here has nothing to do with whether God approves or disapproves of birth control. Talk about bad hermeneutics. In verse 11, Judah told Tamar to wait until Shelah, the third son, was old enough, and then he would be given as a husband to Tamar. But Judah did not follow through with his promise. All right, let's take a doctrinal or teaching point now from this section. The story of Judah with Tamar magnifies the faith of Joseph. The story of Judah with Tamar magnifies the faith of Joseph. Genesis 38 is like a parenthesis in the story of Joseph. Why did God interrupt the account of faithful Joseph, which begins in Genesis 37 and continues in Genesis 39, with this account of Judah's sin here in Genesis 38? Well, let me suggest two reasons. There may be more. Number one, to show why God allowed the bondage of Israel in Egypt. Here in Genesis 38, we see Judah moving away from home and intermarrying with the pagan Canaanites, verses 1 and 2. Now, we know from Scripture, and archaeology backs it up, that the Canaanites were very idolatrous and immoral people. If God had not brought Israel down to Egypt, Judah's action here would have been repeated many times by the descendants of Abraham, so that the Jewish people would no longer be Jewish and the faith of the fathers would be contaminated and polluted with the idolatry and immorality of the Canaanites. In Egypt, there was very little intermarriage because the Egyptians detested the Hebrews. See Genesis 43:32 and Genesis 46:34 in this connection. Egypt, you see, was a shelter from contamination by the Canaanite idolatry and immorality. Now, a second reason why Genesis 38 is included in the Joseph story is because of our doctrinal point here. The story of Judah with Tamar magnifies the faith of Joseph. Joseph's faith and moral character is highlighted and enhanced in contrast, you see, to the lack of faith and immoral character of Judah, as we see here in Genesis 38. This, by the way, is a structural motif that is used throughout Genesis. Abel's faith is highlighted in contrast to the lack of faith of Cain. Abraham's faith is highlighted in contrast to the lack of faith of Lot. Jacob's faith is highlighted in contrast to the lack of faith of Esau. And here, Joseph's faith is highlighted in contrast to the lack of faith of Judah, as we see here in Genesis 38. The story of Judah with Tamar magnifies the faith of Joseph. Practical application. Do you keep your promises? Do you keep your promises? Judah promised Tamar that if she waited, she would be given Shelah as a husband. But Judah did not keep his promise. Oh, he had his reasons, of course. He thought Tamar was the kiss of death, since two of his sons had already died being married to Tamar. But Judah was wrong on this score, and he was wrong not to keep his promise. Do you keep your promises? What about that promise you made to help someone out, and then you conveniently forgot about that promise? What about your promise to be faithful to that special person that God gave to you? What about your promise to give to the Lord? Do you keep your promises? Now let's read the rest of Genesis 38, beginning at verse 12. Now in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died, and Judah was comforted and went up to his sheep shearers at Timnah, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, saying, "Look, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep." So she took off her widow's garments, covered herself with a veil, and wrapped herself and sat in an open place which was on the way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given to him as a wife. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot, because she had covered her face. Then he turned into her by the way and said, "Please let me come into you." For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. So she said, "What will you give me that you may come into me?" And he said, "I will send you a young goat from the flock." And she said, "Will you give me a pledge till you send it?" Then he said, "What pledge shall I give you?" So she said, "Your signet and cord and your staff that is in your hand." Then he gave them to her and went into her, and she conceived by him. So she arose and went away and laid aside her veil and put on the garments of her widowhood. And Judah sent the young goat by the hand of his friend the Adullamite to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he did not find her. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where is the harlot who was openly by the roadside?" And they said, "There was no harlot in this place." And he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." Also the men of the place said, "There was no harlot in this place." Then Judah said, "Let her take them for herself, lest we be shamed. For I sent this young goat, and you have not found her." And it came to pass about 3 months after that Judah was told, saying, "Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has played the harlot. Furthermore, she is with child by harlotry." So Judah said, "Bring her out and let her be burned." When she was brought out, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, "By the man to whom these belong, I am with child." And she said, "Please determine whose these are, the signet and cord and staff." So Judah acknowledged them and said, "She has been more righteous than I, because I did not give her to Shelah, my son." And he never knew her again. Now it came to pass, at the time for giving birth, that behold, twins were in her womb. And so it was, when she was giving birth, that one put out his hand, and the midwife took a scarlet thread and bound it on his hand, saying, "This one came out first." Then it happened, as he drew back his hand, that his brother came out unexpectedly. And she said, "How did you break through? This breach be upon you." Therefore his name was called Perez. Afterward, his brother came out, who had the scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was called Zerah. Let's consider a few more background notes. Because Judah was not faithful to his promise, Tamar decided to take matters into her own hands. She rightly wanted to preserve the line of Judah, but she went about it the wrong way. After Judah's wife died, Tamar was able to seduce Judah during a time of sheep shearing, which was usually a happy time with a party-like atmosphere. Now, as a pledge for payment, Judah gave her his signet or seal and cord and staff. The seal here was probably what is known as a cylinder seal, worn around the neck with the attached cord. A cylinder seal was engraved so that when it was rolled over wet clay, the owner's distinctive engraving was clearly obvious, as good as a fingerprint. That's why Tamar wanted this as a pledge, along with Judah's staff, which also would have identifying markings, proving it was Judah's. So when Tamar was found to be pregnant, there was no mistake as to who the father was. All right, what about a doctrinal point now from this second half of Genesis 38? The story of Judah with Tamar magnifies the grace of God. The story of Judah with Tamar magnifies the grace of God. The story of Judah and Tamar is not a pleasant story. You have broken promises, deception, immorality, incest. But through it all, we see the grace of God. In fact, we see the grace of God magnified because it is through Perez, one of the twins that is born to Tamar through this wrong relationship with Judah, that the messianic lineage traces. In the genealogy of Christ in Matthew chapter 1, we find the names of Judah and Tamar. Romans 5:20 says, where sin abounded, grace abounded much more. Certainly we see that here. Tamar, by the way, is one of the four women mentioned in the genealogy of Christ in Matthew chapter 1. Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba. These women were all most likely Gentiles. And three of the four were certainly not models of perfection. But God, in his wonderful grace, overruled. In spite of the sinful events of Genesis 38, Judah was not removed as the messianic tribe. And the line of the Messiah does not come through Joseph, as we might expect, but it comes through Judah and Tamar. In no way does this condone their wrongdoing, but it shows the grace of God. The story of Judah with Tamar magnifies the grace of God. What about practical application? Don't be too quick to point the finger at other sinners. Don't be too quick to point the finger at other sinners. When Judah heard that Tamar was pregnant through prostitution, he was angry. Bring her out and let her be burned, he said in verse 24. But he pointed the finger too quickly. It wasn't long before he had to acknowledge that he was the bigger sinner. Don't be too quick to point the finger at other sinners. Did you ever do this? Very easy to do. Now, we may not be involved in sins like Judah and Tamar, but we are all sinners. And it's part of human nature to easily see the sins of others, but be blind to our own sins. That's why the Lord Jesus said, Luke chapter 6, verse 41 and 42, and why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not perceive the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, brother, let me remove the speck that is in your eye, when you yourself do not see the plank that is in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck that is in your brother's eye. Who are you pointing your finger at right now? Don't be too quick to point the finger at other sinners.